Let's focus for a few moments on tennis. And I'm delighted to say we're joined by Stephen Higgins from Cross Court View, the website. Stephen, thanks for joining us. I've always wanted to say this. You've just touched down from Wimbledon to join us in studio.
I know the glamour has just jetted in from Manchester, from London, to try avoid all the shenanigans. But yeah, I just came back from Wimbledon, was there for the week.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think on the men's side, as unsurprisingly, it looks like Novak Djokovic is titled to lose. He was clearly the most impressive player I saw over the 4 days. It's interesting, actually, when you look at Nadal, so dominant at Roland Garros, his own court, how unsure he looks coming to the grass, where he's had great success, but not to the same degree. Djokovic is very determined, obviously, after the Australian Open debacle, his disappointment at Roland Garros. And now, by the looks of things at the moment, he might not be allowed to play the US Open because of the vaccination rules. So he looks like he's started at 11. Mm. He's determined to get his fourth in a row at Wimbledon. And he'd also match Pete Sampras on 7 titles.
Yeah. We'll dig into all of that very, very shortly. But I'm just intrigued because it's been on the bucket list for many years to go to Wimbledon. I haven't managed to do so. Presumably that this week wasn't your first visit to Wimbledon, was it?
No, I went in 2019.
And what's it like?
It's a glorious celebration of tennis. It's a very unusual thing. You've obviously got the queue, which is a very specific thing to Wimbledon. I wouldn't be a massive fan of it. I think in the modern era, while they probably think it democratizes the tournament by allowing everyone the chance that they could turn up on the day, it also means that you have to wait for 6 hours to get into a court, and you're absolutely wrecked by the time you even get in before you've even started seeing the tennis. It is very traditional, but it's also very innovative as well. So you'll have water fountains everywhere. There's a big emphasis on recycling. They're very big into digital. Obviously, they have a big operation with their app and their website. So in some ways, they're a contradiction in that sense, but in a positive way. One thing that's interesting comparing Wimbledon to, say, Roland Garros is you get a lot of people who go in who are there for the strawberries and cream and the Pims.
I was going to ask you about the strawberries and cream.
To be seen at Wimbledon in their fancy dresses and shirts. And there's a running monologue during points, which is kind of hard to get used to. At Roland Garros, while they can be quite brutal on players, they very much respect the points and the rallies. They're very much into that.
Yeah.
But it's such an important tournament. It is the spiritual home of tennis. And when you're on centre court itself, it is the best court in the world. There is a magical quality to it. You just think of all the great names who've played there. This year, it's celebrating 100 years at centre court since they moved to the Church Road.
And did you get there this week to centre
court? Yeah, I was there Wednesday, Thursday.
Who did you see?
So Djokovic and Nadal. And I popped out then to see a bit of Simona Halep and Tsitsipas, and I think it's about 40 players. Maybe I could go through them, but you have to get to all the Euro coverage.
Are tickets expensive?
Tickets, the day pass tickets are actually very reasonable. If you do the queue, depending on how it goes for you, it can be about £27, which that you're in for the day.
Yeah.
And there's also a bonus with Wimbledon that they have a resale status where later on the match or later on the day you can pay about £10 to £15 to get into centre court, court number one, court number two. So you will actually have the chance to get in to see some of the stars. There's a big queue for Serena Williams' 3-hour epic with Harmony Tan, and I couldn't believe there's probably 1,000 people in the resale queue hoping to get in. Yeah. They obviously got very good value for their money.
Yeah, that was one of the big stories, of course, of the week. Serena, will she come back, do you think?
Yeah, and then even Venus Williams popping up out of nowhere. It's always very hard to judge with Serena because it was such a surprise. She only announced that before Eastbourne that she'd even play. I don't think she'd probably like to go out like that, losing the first round to someone as unheralded. You're not talking about losing to Simona Halep or Iga Świątek. So I wouldn't be surprised if she popped up again. There's also the thing of I could imagine the romanticism of she might play doubles with Venus one more time at Wimbledon, her favourite tournament, the tournament where she's been most dominant.
Okay. From the stories today, I mean, it's still early enough in the day. Świątek is in action at the moment, but I mentioned before you joined us, Coco Gauff gone. You saw a bit of her the other night, is that right?
Yeah, I watched her the other night. I think the thing with Coco Gauff, it was interesting when she got to the final of the French Open as well. Her serve is absolutely superb. So she hit 124 mile an hour serve the night I was there, which I think was the fastest of the championships on the women's side. And her backhand is excellent and her athleticism is almost unparalleled, but her forehand is very shaky. And even during the match I watched, she missed a lot. And so that was something that Świątek was able to capitalize on in Roland Garros, where going forehand to forehand with Świątek, who might have the best forehand in the women's game, it broke down a lot to the point where you could see the confidence sap away from Gauff towards the end of that match, where she could barely even hit a forehand, which is sad. But of course, she's very young.
Yeah, yeah.
But it doesn't surprise me. Amanda Nisimova, who beat her today, on the other hand, is a magnificent ball striker of both sides. Doesn't have quite the athleticism of Coco Gauff or the serve, but is a wonderful player in her own right and really likes the grass as well. So that wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. In terms of the women's singles, we'll come on to the men's in just a few moments ago. Is it largely about Iga Swiatek, French Open winner?
She's now obviously playing at the moment. This will be an interesting clash where she plays Elise Cornet, who's a tricky player. Iga Swiatek's on a 37 match winning streak now. I think she's matched Martina Hingis's this time. Every week she's breaking or matching some old record. If she can put the sword kind of to Elise Cornet and really make a statement, then it's a bad sign for the rest of the draw, because she was a bit shaky in the last match. And while most of the time she has won her matches kind of in two sets, particularly during her streak, going three sets the last match would be interesting. Is there any sort of chink in the armor, or has that kind of just focused her mind of the job that she has ahead of her? She has a fantastic support team. Daria Abramovitz, who's her sports psychologist, she seems to have a really level head. She just takes each match as it comes along, doesn't get too distracted with the sponsorships and the status and her prestige. But I do think if something happens to her, or her level doesn't quite reach what it has over previous months, then you might look at someone like Petra Kvitova, who's playing today, who won Eastbourne. Obviously, people will remember she won Wimbledon twice, absolutely loves the grass, maybe has found form just in time. And maybe someone like Yelena Ostapenko, the former French Open champion, who also has found form just in time, previous semi-finals at Wimbledon, and on her day can be absolutely devastating.
Yeah, and Simona Halep is in action at the moment. She's taken the opening set in her match against Fresh by 6-4. What about Halep? Where do you see her?
Yeah, Halep. I watched Halep the other night, and there was, of course, the talk before the tournament about whether she would get to open centre court. She was the champion in 2019. She didn't get the chance to do it in 2020 because of injury. She might be quite focused. She's kind of come into form as well as the season's progressed. She had an injury for a few months under the guidance of Patrick Mouratoglou, Serena Williams' former coach, which is quite interesting. Loves the grass, obviously. Her greatest match of her life was probably the final against Serena Williams when she won. Definitely wouldn't count her out. Mm. She knows how to do it. Grass is quite specialised, that particularly on the men's side, but to a degree on the women's side. If they haven't been to the final, if they haven't shown that they're able to get through the juggernaut and the marathon of the Grand Slam, it's very hard to see people break through that easily. She's done it. She knows how to do it.
This may seem like a stupid question, but as a layman who'd love to go to Wimbledon someday, the difference for players between grass and clay, I mean, for anybody immersed in the game, it's probably pretty obvious, but just explain why some players struggle to adapt between one and, say, clay and grass.
Yeah, there's quite a debate about it, because you'll have basically Wimbledon changed in 2002 when they changed the composition of the grass from the old kind of 100%, I think it was 100% rye, and then they changed it to a hybrid to make it harder wearing. So the serving volleyers of your Pete Sampras, Stefan Edberg, Goran Ivanišević, etc., used to love the Wimbledon grass, where obviously the ball would fly through off the serve, they could get in behind the first volley, end the point very quickly. But for a spectator, that could be quite boring, particularly when the enormous servers came along. What they've done is to try and make the grass a bit more hard wearing. It has, to a degree, maybe slowed down the surface a bit. The bounce is still very low, but it actually plays, as you see with the rallies, say Novak Djokovic would have, it plays more like a low bouncing hard court than the old kind of whippy grass of old. In terms of clay, because of the brick surface on top of clay, it's a hard surface with brick on top. It bounces up very high, as you've seen accentuated by, say, Rafael Nadal's forehand. So one of the things that's really important at Roland Garros is you usually are deeper in the court because the ball will be bouncing up to your shoulder height. You have to have the strength to be able to hit the ball through the court off less pace. So one of the reasons why Nadal is so successful is because he's such a beast of a man. He is able to generate the pace and last over the hours of having to play balls up at his shoulder height. While on the other side of the court, as we saw famously with Roger Federer in his finals, he's trying to hit backhands up over his shoulder for 4 hours. And it's a very hard thing to do. So the bounce is different. The footwork is different in terms of, you'll see on grass or on clay, lots of sliding into the ball in terms of sliding in for covering drop shots, sliding out to different sides. Djokovic seems to be an absolute master of adapting from one to the other, better than Nadal. Well, Nadal is the king of clay. He struggles to transition so quickly in the space of a few weeks to grass, whereas Djokovic seems to be able to get to a semi or final in the French Open and immediately click into gear of taking the ball earlier on grass, being more aggressive. But yeah, there is a difference. It's probably not as extreme as it was in, say, the 80s or 90s, but there is a difference. Yeah.
What was the reaction of the crowd to Djokovic this week?
It's very respectful of Djokovic. He's always an interesting character where he goes. Probably he's actually quite well respected in France as well. One thing that was actually, that when you were there, the soundtrack of Wimbledon this year, and it wasn't a surprise to see Matteo Berrettini and Marin Cilic pull out with COVID, is the coughing. Now, historically at Wimbledon, you know, people would be ashamed to let out a cough. All you heard is coughing. You heard the ball being struck by the strings. You heard lines people call, and then you heard coughing. So obviously, unfortunately, we're back in.
Coughing's not good these days.
Yeah, we're back in that era again. But in terms of, no, there's a lot of respect for Djokovic. He was absolutely the most impressive player I saw there. He looks absolutely determined and come into a top gear that he wants this title. He wants to get back in that race with Nadal, get onto 21 Grand Slams, and then maybe start next year afresh without all the fun and games of Australia.
Yeah, so you see him going all the way, but potentially he's got a tricky enough quarterfinal if things play out as we expect they might.
I don't think he might play Carlos Alcaraz, who is the golden boy of the moment. Now, he has made a great impression on the fans. He's an incredibly exciting player, but it's still very early for him. He has no experience on grass. The biggest challenge for someone going into Wimbledon in particular is very few people have even made the final. So you're asking someone to play against, you know, one of the three best guys of all time and beat them somewhere where he's won six times, say, in terms of Djokovic. It's a lot to ask for somebody. Usually when you see these guys, say, at Tsitsipas, a Dominic Thiem, Daniel Medvedev, they kind of have to make a final once, play the guy, see what that whole experience is like, and then maybe the next time they come along, they'll win it. But they don't go in the first time and just beat Djokovic, Nadal, or Federer. So while Alcaraz absolutely could put up a great performance, and maybe he'll make history and knock Djokovic out, which would be great for the men's game, I don't see that happening. Djokovic is at the highest level of the men playing there. He's much more sure of himself on that surface. In some ways, his feeling about centre court will be akin to Rafa Nadal's feeling about Philippe Chatrier.
Yeah. Is he the next big thing, though, in terms of...
Oh, absolutely. He is fantastic in every respect. Incredible imagination in his game. Wonderful forehand. Brilliant athleticism, speed. Seems like a really good guy. Humble. Nadal's a big fan of him. He kind of works really hard, does the thing. He's coached by Juan Carlos Ferreira, the former world number one. He has all the tools to be the next superstar in men's tennis, and he'll be fantastic to watch, hopefully, for 10 to 15 years.
Are you a fan of Kyrgios?
What's very interesting about Kyrgios...
He's a colourful figure, isn't he?
He's a colourful figure. He has the chance, if he can get through his next match, the draw is quite open. He's in the bottom half away from the big guys. He has the opportunity to make his first ever semi-final in a major. People get a bit ahead of themselves with Kyrgios. He only made one quarter-final in his life at a major. Well, two, but he only made one at Wimbledon in 2014. Like, that's an awful long time ago. He hasn't shown over the years since that he can sustain the level to actually get to five, six, seven matches. He's great entertainment. I think there's always questions about his attitude and how that diminishes his actual talent.
Yeah. Is he popular in the changing room with the other players, given the controversy that he manages to court?
Well, I mean, it depends who you ask. I think if you ask, Andy Murray seems to get on very well with him. If you ask other people, like, I remember Casper Ruud, who's a top five player now, or Pablo Carreño Busta, Kyrgios would be slating them on Twitter about how their ranking isn't real because they're clay court kind of players. So I'd say there might be a few in the camp who like him, and then there's quite a lot who probably are a bit mixed.
Stephen Higgins of Cross Court View, just in a word. So it's Djokovic, Swiatek?
Yeah, I think that's what's going to happen, yeah.
Okay. All right, we shall see. I'm sure you'll be back with us on Saturday Sport over the course of Wimbledon. But right now on Saturday Sport, let's take a break. Back with Camogie and golf and so much more right after these.